This is a live educational teletalk that is being recorded. The podcast is provided by Terry O'Hara, professional animal communicator, and it is the property of AnimalWise, LLC. Please do not duplicate, sell, or forward this recording. If you have any questions or comments regarding the content of this talk or animal communication, they can be directed to Terry's website at www.animalwise.com. That's www.animalwise.com. Enjoy the talk. I want to talk about harmony in households. The reason I want to talk about harmony in households is because we all want harmony in our households, and especially the animals, and especially if the animals are limited to living within the home, such as indoor-only kitties, because that's their entire world. So they want to have as much peace and harmony in their entire world as possible. And so my goal as an animal communicator is to help animals' voices be heard so we can understand what will help them, what will help them be happier, whether it's a change in food or different living circumstances. You know, one of the common requests, for example, because I believe there's always solutions. And one common request sometimes is like if there's an elder kitty, they might say, can I just be in the bedroom and can you close the door and can I just have my own space for a while? You know, just give me the evening once in a while where I don't have to think about anybody else. So sometimes it's as simple as that. And then, of course, it's, you know, there's the whole gamut as to who else, what else can be asked from the animals. So we will cover all of that. And what I was going to start with is what occurs in the households typically that causes disharmony. And basically it's life, because life changes. Our lives are never stagnant and the same, you know, unlimited periods of time. We have changes, whether we change a job and suddenly we went from, you know, working at home, now we're out of the home and working in an office, and that change can affect animals. And of course we fall in love, we get new partners, they may come with children, we may create children with new partners, and so animals are expected by living in our lives to go with the flow of the possible changes, and most of the time they do pretty darn wonderfully, and that's okay. Another change that happens that changes a dynamic in a household is if an animal passes on, because the animal may have been an elder for quite a while and may not have appeared to be bossing any of the other animals around, but often they're an anchor, and they do set the tone, and there is a lot of respect for that elder. So it can be like a rocky boat when that elder passes on, because the other animals often think, ooh, now what do we do? It may not look different to the humans other than the animal is missing, but it can feel very, very different to the animals that live there, because they were dependent on their energy and their way of just kind of holding down the fort as perhaps the matriarch or patriarch of the animal family. And also, we merge households. So we bring two households together, whether we move into a roommate situation or a new partner situation. And this can often mean new turf for both households of animals that come together, or even worse, it can mean invaders coming into someone's turf. So, for example, if a person has a couple of animals and they fall in love and their new person eventually moves in with their couple of animals, it can be a complete threat to the ones who were established. And we're busy in la-la land being all excited and happy about the new love and the new life, and we forget how hard it is as animals. So one of the things we have to realize is that when we make changes, when we add animals, when we add family members, we simply have to own it, and we have to work with it. And that's what this talk is all about. How can we own it? How can we, you know, many of us are guilty of doing it wrong, and so we're going to talk about that. This is not to point fingers, but we've all done it wrong, probably one way, shape, or form, or another. And so it's about learning what's wrong from what we can do differently in the future to make it go better. So when I tune into households where people have called me to say, yikes, we're having a really hard time, you know, the two cats are not getting along. And so one of the things I focus on right away is I ask the animals to tell me from their perspective what's going on, because in my ears, the human is telling me all about what happened. Well, you know, we found this kitty, and it was out in the rain, and nobody's claimed it, and we put signs up, and blah, blah, blah. And meanwhile, I'm tuning into the kitties. One is really frightened and very confused, the new kitty. And the other one is saying, who the heck is this and why are they still here? And the human is busy trying to find their home, but also falling in love with the new kitty and thinking maybe we'll stay. And then we kind of shift into, you know, saying to the established kitty, isn't he cute? Don't you love him? Don't you want him to stay? And we start projecting our stuff onto the animals, which, as anybody that has done that pretty much learns, it really pisses them off. They do not like it when we expect them to change. So we're going to go into what I call top 10 mistakes that humans make. And so just know that chaos, confusion, conflicts, we're going to dive into all of that here. And we also have to remember who's the culprit causing the change. Usually, it's us. And so we have to work on us in order to help work on solving situations with the animals. Again, this is not about blame, but I'm going to give you an example so you realize we're all human. I met a dog that needed fostering. I do not foster. It's one of my policies. I just don't foster because I don't have the strength of heart to not fall in love. And I also am pretty good about setting my limits because if you could imagine, you know, I probably get at least an email a week from somebody saying, do you know anybody that could help this animal, that could take this animal? So in order to protect my boundaries from my heart, I just have to say I don't do that. And one day I broke my rule because I met this adorable husky and I have a thing for big boy dogs. It's just something I love. And before I knew it, I met him and somebody was trying to transport him from one place to the next and they didn't have any place to keep him and blah, 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 blah. And before I knew it, I said, I'll take him. And I didn't even quite know how it all happened. And I brought him home and I didn't have a fenced-in yard. I had an invisible fence. And as many people know, huskies will take off and run. So it was not a smart move on my part at all. I was not a good place to harbor him in regards to having him be able to have fun because he couldn't run free because I had an invisible fence and he didn't know how that worked and he had to be on leash all the time. So right off the bat, I was, you know, kind of goofing up what my heartstrings were doing when I met him and thinking in my head, oh, this will be great. I can help him. I'll help him find a home. I definitely won't keep him, blah, blah, blah. You know, and so if this sounds familiar to any of you, this is what happens. It's our process, and it's okay. We have our process. And before I knew it, I was having to walk him outside every time he wanted to potty. I was realizing he wasn't having a lot of fun because I couldn't let him run. But more importantly, I was getting the serious cold shoulder from my girl dog, Shiloh. And she always loved dogs that came to visit. Always, always, always. It's the first time she's ever snubbed another dog. And it took me 2 weeks to realize she was snubbing him because that was her way of saying to me, he is not staying. You are not falling in love with him. He is definitely not staying. And I was very stubborn and thick-headed, as us humans can be, and it took me a good couple of weeks to finally get that she was unhappy, the cats were scared of him, he was chasing them, though I didn't let him, you know, freely chase them, but he would dart towards them, and I kept him on a leash in the house a lot of the times if the cats were out and about in the same room. So I tried to do everything that I knew was right, and I still pushed it. I still pushed into the chaos. I still caused the confusion, and I still created the conflict. So we are all guilty from time to time, and just own it, that's all. Don't be beating yourself up. Don't be feeling guilty. Don't be pleading with them to please make this work. Just be real with it first and foremost. And then a lot of times animals calm down and solutions come forward. Okay, and it's very important to realize each animal has his or her own personality and preferences, and so do you. So my animals, my two cats and two dogs, had no desire for a new family member, and they definitely had no desire for a out-of-control, one-and-a-half-year-old, huge husky. None of them. They were like, are you out of your mind? Why would you pick him out of all the dogs? And besides, we have a good household. We're a happy, peaceful, harmonious household. What are you doing? But again, it took me a while to, you know, the light bulb didn't go off, and I didn't say, oh, you guys are so right. Okay, I'll just find him another place to be. Because also, as we know, that's not always easy. But if we decide in our head, if we're fostering or helping somebody, well, there's nobody else out there for him. It's not going to work. Nobody can take him. Everybody's full. Then we're being dishonest to ourselves, and we're being disrespectful to the animals. There's always a solution. Change your thought process first and foremost. There's always a solution. This dog, I named him Timber, and I was up in Evergreen, and there's a nonprofit group called Evergreen Animal Protective League, and that's who I was fostering him for, and they have no shelter or anything, so it's all fosters in homes. And I called them and said, I can't keep him. It's not fun for him. It's not right for my animals, and I'm falling in love with him, and he can't stay. And so they said, well, you know what, we just got a phone call, and we were just getting ready to go meet a new family, new to them, whose elder husky passed, and they're very interested in him. So they went, and they met him, met the people. They called me. They came and got him. They took him, and they adopted him. That's all I knew. About a month later, I ran into some friends that I knew, and they said, guess what? And these were people I knew kind of peripherally. They said, we got a new dog, and they started describing him. And they had adopted Timber. So by me getting out of the way, I helped my friends, though I didn't know it, because I didn't think they needed a new dog, because I didn't know their elder dog had passed yet. And by me getting out of the way, a solution came forward, and it was a wonderful solution. And I felt like my heart was rewarded to know, oh, my gosh, these people are going to love him. He's got a great home. He has a huge property fenced in. He's going to have a blast. So solutions are around the corner. We have to believe in them. So let's start by getting real. And as I wrote on my little agenda here, this might be a little painful, so sit down, put your seatbelt on, because none of us like hearing what we've done wrong. But I do it in lightheartedness and with love. So let's talk about what are the top 10 mistakes a human makes when there is conflict in the household. Again, I'm not necessarily addressing, two dogs that have lived together for 4 years and they suddenly start fighting. That's behavior issues. That's different than harmonious households and conflicts, okay? So take these 10 things knowing some kind of change has happened with life. So the first one is no warning. Could you imagine being your cat or dog or guinea pig or whomever you have, and you leave the house every day, so they see you leave and you go off to work or you go to a grocery store, you do what you do and you come back and you love them, and one day you walk in with an animal and a big smile on your face, and you just think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and they think, what'd you do? How'd this happen? You know, they can't believe that you have simply shown up with a new animal. Now, they don't know your journey. What happened when you left that day? Were you leaving with intentions to go to the shelter because you decided your cat looked lonely and you wanted somebody to be a companion? Did you leave and have no thoughts in your mind of having a new companion? And did you see somebody running in the street and you're helping them? Or did you, like some of my clients say, I wasn't even thinking about it, and I turned down the street where the shelter was, and before I knew it, I was in there walking around, and suddenly you come home with somebody that just had to have a home. They just had to have a home, is what you end up telling your animals. Or did you go off to work, and someone said, you know, my father passed away, and his dog's about to be taken to the shelter, and they'll probably euthanize him, and, you know, he needs a home, and you said, I'll take him. Was it a very spontaneous moment of open-heartedness and helping? I mean, what happened to you that day? The animals need to know, and we forget to tell them. So the most important thing, and it's never too late, by the way, so if you have a circumstance where a year ago you came home with somebody and it's not been going well, it's never too late to tell them why the heck you walked in the door that day with that animal. Explain to them. That's what I do with my consultations, is I do explain to the animals, okay, this is what happened when your mom or dad or family left the house, and this is why they came back with somebody. Okay, so no warning is number one. No warning is really hard on animals, and just think about that and do whatever you can to pave that over a little bit, make it smoother. Second top 10 mistake, we humans assume it will work. We assume it will work. Why? Because usually we want it to. And so we've conjured up the notion in our own heads that this will work. Yeah, this will work, you know. Okay, so I have Jake, and Jake is a dog, and Jake is a very happy dog, and he loves other dogs, and this will work. He'll like this dog. This is my thought process back then. Jake's getting older. He can't run around and guard his property like he used to. He'll teach Timber. He can teach him how to guard his property. I had all kinds of reasons in my head why this would work. But I didn't stop to think about it from their perspectives as much as I should have at first. I should have thought about it before I even brought him home, and that's a big mistake that we do. We don't think about it before we act, and it's never too late to make corrections. But don't assume it will work. Let the animals have their opportunity to show you it's hard for them to change. Let the change be a process, and let them have the opportunity to huff and puff and scream and yell or pout or isolate, whatever they need to do. Because a lot of times people will call me and they'll say, well, you know, my kitty seems to be okay with the new cat. Like, they eat side by side or they can be in the same room now, but she spends all her time under the bed. Well, she's not happy. And a lot of the times the reason she's not happy is because we're assuming she's going to just be fine, and we're in our minds by accident picturing them playing, and isn't this great, and don't you want to groom him, and don't you want to cuddle him? And she's up there feeling nauseous because she can't believe you want her to like this cat, because he is not her kind of cat at all, not the kind she would ever pick as a friend. So don't assume anything, and I want to give you an example of some clients recently. I got a call from a household where there are two friends, and they decided for financial reasons they were going to buy a house together. So they bought a three-level house, and they decided to pool their money so they could get a bigger house together and afford homes and not rent anymore. And so they said, so we bought it, this is how they presented it, we bought a three-level house so it could work for everybody. One came with two cats, another came with one cat, and they were kind of getting along, they were working it out. So the middle floor is common ground, the upper level is one of the people's home front, so to speak, and the lower level is the others. And I thought, what a perfect situation. But what did they go and do? They decided to get two more cats. Why? They can't even tell me. When I asked them why, they said, we don't even know. We don't even know why it happened. These are purebred cats. They went out and each bought a new cat. So now they have five. And the one boy kitty that lived there, who was, as far as he was concerned, he was tolerating the new cat quite well. They were getting along. He had changed. He had adapted. He had adapted to the new household. He hadn't marked anything. He was proud of himself. Then they went and got a boy kitty who was in full of himself, large personality. These weren't kittens. They got him older, like about a year. And he's been marking ever since, and so is the new one, because the new one is challenging him. So we have to look at, we can't assume because we have an upstairs for one family and a downstairs for another family and then common ground that everyone will have a great time in common ground. And then during the consult, I learned that they have a cat tree. Well, that's upstairs, so everybody's welcome to be in the cat tree. And I said, but that's the upstairs kitty's space. So we have to be very clear on what are we assuming and what are we setting up, okay? So let's go on to number three. Top 10 mistakes. This is number three. We forget to think about matching the animals based on personalities. We just fall for somebody, or somebody needs a home, or somebody needs us, or somebody asks us to watch somebody. Now, I think if I asked all of you to take 1 second to close your eyes and imagine a personality of a human being that really rubs you raw, perhaps a rude, loud person, perhaps somebody that's real pushy, perhaps somebody that's touchy-feely, that you don't like touchy. Just take a second and imagine a kind of person that bugs you. And now I'm going to tell you I'm moving that person into your household tonight. That kind of person's arriving tonight. And I'm going to assume you're going to like him. And I'm not going to give you any warning, him or her. And I really want you to be best friends. I really want you to get along, and I'd love for you to love each other. Now, that's what we're doing to the animals. We are bringing somebody in with his or her own personality, own attitudes, and more importantly, own issues. If we're bringing in an animal from a shelter to foster, we're bringing an animal that's coming in with all kinds of energy issues because it's been living in a shelter, he or she's been living in a shelter, feeling full of fear. Feeling, there's a good example of a question at the end here that I will tie in with this, but full of fear, full of anxiety, doesn't have a home, doesn't know who loves him or her, and suddenly I'm in a house and I'm looking at some eyes of another kitty that is saying, who the heck are you? Why are you here? Get out. And I don't feel safe. I don't feel safe if I'm that kitty. And then there's the human going, oh, but he's so sweet and he needs a home and he's been in a cage for so long and we really need to help him. But there's two personalities looking at each other. There's two individuals with their stuff looking at each other. So if you are going to foster or if you are going to adopt or if you have situations where you can choose to match the animals based on personality, really think it through. A lot of us know, like I have a boy kitty named Merlin. I know without a doubt, if I ever wanted to bring another big boy kitty into the house, big boy personality, I would break his heart because he is the big boy kitty. He is the man around here, and I would never do that. So we have to realize what are the personalities of whom we have and what are we expecting of them when we bring another animal in, okay? And then that kind of flows right into number four, and that is merging too fast. We are very guilty of oh, look, they're looking at each other, you know, under the door, they're sniffing each other. It's all great, and we're going to open the door and let them out, and then suddenly the cat hisses and spits, and you say, but you were just playing with them under the door. Yeah, but there was a door protecting me, and you just moved it. So go slowly, go gently, go easily. Take a long time to do it. If you want it to be successful, take your time. Slow yourself down, because we do get excited because we're happy to have a new family member. If you've merged two households, like you've fallen in love and you've merged two households, make sure, let's say, you know, you have a dog and two cats, and your new partner has two dogs, and the dogs actually like each other, but you find your dog is starting to pout a lot. Maybe your dog misses those walks with just you and doesn't want to do walks with three dogs for the rest of his or her life. So make sure that you don't do everything so fast and notice what pleases them and what brings them joy so you can keep doing some of that stuff as you're expecting them to merge in other ways. You might want to keep taking that doggy on special walks at least a couple times a week, just you and that dog, even though you love the new human and the new human's dogs and everybody might be getting along. Sometimes you still need those special times and those special patterns that you used to have. So think about those too. So merging too fast is detrimental and sometimes destructive, and sometimes permanent damage is caused by us doing it too fast. Sometimes the kitties can't get over themselves. Sometimes the dogs just can't stop fighting because they're animals. They're not humans. Okay, number five. Humans may not want the change that has just occurred. So, for example, we may fall in love with somebody, but we don't particularly want their three dogs and a cat. And we've already got a dog and a cat, and we never intended to have a household full of all that dog hair and cat fur and chaos. And so sometimes our animals are sensing from us that we're not thrilled about the change. Or another example would be if we inherit animals, if somebody's passed away or a family member is moving and they beg us, please, please, please take my animals. We're going to Africa for a year because my husband's job and we can't put them in a shelter and we don't know anybody else. And so suddenly we've got a situation on our hands that we're not thrilled about. But with our big open hearts, we are trying to offer the love and the kindness and the right thing. We want to do the right thing. So stop for a second and imagine, what does that feel like to your animals if they're sensing, you've walked in with a couple new dogs and you don't seem happy about it. So your animals are looking at that situation and thinking, I think we have a problem here. I think I'm going to have to take care of it. I think I'm going to have to make sure these dogs know they're not welcome. So if I'm a dog, I'm going to probably start fighting with them or growling at them or getting mad if they go in the kitchen where my human just went because my human's not happy that they're following her because my human's not so sure they should be here. So remember, whatever we're thinking and we're feeling about the situation, they are picking up on and responding to. And also, for the sake of the animals that have perhaps just come into our household where it's not working out very well, and they perhaps didn't want the change, they feel that too. And can you imagine how that feels? I'm not wanted here. Why am I here then? So sometimes, I just did a consult yesterday, which was extremely difficult for me, and rarely in all the years of me doing the work that I do have I fired a client. But I almost did with this one, because the dog that she was asking about does not want to be an outside dog. The husband won't allow any animals in the house. The dog is terrified living outside. She showed up as a stray. She's terrified. So she pleads to come in all the time. So she licks them. She cries. She whimpers. They have a nice warm place for her outside. She's not happy being an outside dog. So when a client calls me and says, we have a new situation. This stray showed up. We're taking her in. Nobody else wants her. You know, how hard did you try to find another home? Well, you know, everybody's got strays around here and nobody else wants her. So the human's already decided there's no other option for this dog, which I disagree with. I think there's always options and solutions. And she's trying to make the best of it. I admire that. But this dog is terribly unhappy. And she tells me that the husband doesn't like the dog because she's too needy. Well, she's needy because she's unhappy. And she's unhappy because she's a stray that was taken in and it kept with good intentions, but she's like a square peg in a round circle. She doesn't fit. She doesn't fit in this circumstance. It's not to her best interest. So I was able to talk with her about possible solutions and ways to change things, and there's no change in the husband, but ways that the woman can make some solution changes for this dog to be happier. But if she were to call me back again and again and again and just say, well, she's not happy, you know, I gave her this or I gave her that and she's not happy, I will tell her, probably on the second call actually, you need to find another home for this dog. You are not making this better for this dog. And it's unfortunate because the woman loves her. But the circumstances might not be right. So her husband doesn't want that change. That's my point for point number five here. He doesn't want that change and he doesn't want that dog. And that dog has to live with that energy every single day. So she tries to be sweet, and she tries to be cute, and she tries to make him like her, but to him it comes off sickeningly sweet and obnoxious, and so he dislikes her that much more. So I talked to the dog about how she could be kind and sweet and be near him, but stop some of those behaviors, and maybe he could fall for her. So humans not wanting the change can be hard on the animals, and remember that. And that can be really hard. I mean, I've definitely over the years worked with clients who fell in love with someone and the animal matches are not a good match. And sometimes it's really difficult and it requires compromised living for the rest of the animal's lives where the two cats can just never be in the same part of the house because they're not going to get along. Often it has to do with age. You know, I have a 17-year-old kitty and I've just fallen in love with a man that has three cats. Well, that 17-year-old kitty is not in the mood. Not in the mood at all to get to know those three cats. And that 17-year-old kitty might be much happier up in the bedroom having his or her own space, own little sanctuary, whereas the people try and make it work. But I want her down when I'm watching TV. Well, when she's down there, what does she do? She runs right back upstairs to the bedroom. Of course she does, because she doesn't want to be around the other three kitties. So sometimes we have to realize what we're expecting from them and what they want and what they need. And it's really hard when we see someone we love not happy like that, but we're happy because we've just fallen for this person and we really want this person in our life, but we're really sorry because those three kitties are just being sweet, but they do chase her because they're young and she doesn't understand it. So it's hard for us humans to live in conflict too, but catch yourself and realize how much are you holding on to and how much are you perhaps emotionally contributing to the situation. And there are solutions to work with each situation. So, you know, I would definitely recommend in situations like that that are tough, people work with an animal communicator because there are options of ways to help more harmonious solutions come forward. But it can be individual, of course, depending on exactly what's going on. Another example I wanted to give you about humans may not want the change is a kitty who actually misunderstood. I had a client whose cat was very unhappy when her mom's cat moved in. And her mom had died of breast cancer. And so I was helping the kitty understand that the mom has passed away and the kitty needs a home and there's no way this daughter is not going to love her mom's cat. And asking, so starting by explaining everything that happened and asking her cat, what do you need to help make this work? You know, you don't have to like him. You don't have to love him. You don't have to play with him. You don't have to groom him. You don't have to cuddle him. But what do you need to make this work? And she was afraid that, she kept telling me, I'm afraid that my mom's going to go away and I'll just be with the cat. And so I wasn't quite sure why she was saying that, and I wasn't quite sure how I was getting it. So it took a little bit before I was finally able to articulate that. And she said, well, I have breast cancer too. So this kitty was not upset about the cat being there, but upset her mom was going to die also. So as I went into the consult and helped this kitty understand why the other cat was there, she started getting it that this cat's human had passed on from the same disease that her human is sick with. So then when I explained this to the human, she said, oh, you know, please tell her that my mom was very sick and I'm not sick at all and I had a lumpectomy and it's gone. And, you know, so her breast cancer journey was very different than her mother's. And so we were able to calm the kitty down. But on the surface, it looked like the kitty was interpreting, my mom doesn't want this cat. She didn't plan on a cat. She's sad that this cat has to be here, which meant the sadness of losing her mother. And I'm supposed to understand that this is okay, and I'm sad or scared that I'm going to lose my mother too. So it was a very interesting dynamic. So remember to try and think from their perspective. What have we presented to them literally? What have we said to them out loud? What have we showed them? What have we demonstrated? Like, do we start petting the new dog and kissing the new dog in front of the established dog? And are we showing too much loyalty at first and too much affection at first? What are we showing them? What are we demonstrating to them? And what are we emanating from our hearts emotionally? All right, let's go on to number six. All right, this is going to ring bells. Top 10 mistakes that humans make. Number six, I'm just fostering him. We're just fostering. He's only here for a little while. We're only keeping him temporarily. So I can probably tell you over the 15 years I've been doing this professionally, I've heard that at least 100 to 150 times when I ask, so how did your family members come to you? Because I always ask, oh, I met this one at the shelter. Oh, this one I was just fostering. Now, this is human, and this is okay. But first of all, first and foremost, start to get a grip on, can you foster? Are you capable of fostering? Because fostering means not keeping. And if you're not capable of fostering, then you shouldn't be fostering. Now, that's not to say, am I capable of taking in an animal or two once in a while that needs a foster situation, understanding I'm likely to keep them. If you're real about it, that's fine. But don't try and fool yourself, and don't expect them to be fooled, because they will not be fooled. Some people can do it. It's rare, but some people are very good about fostering. Or I have some clients that train service dogs of different types. And so they have to bring a puppy in and love it and adore it and train it, and boom, it goes off to college. And so they let go. And that, I don't know that I could do that. I think that's so admirable, but I don't know if my heart could do that. So I, you know your boundaries. I know my boundaries. I know my limits of what I can do. But please don't be dishonest to your animals and say we're just fostering when in the back of your mind you're thinking, but maybe he'll stay if they can't find a home. Because most of the time, which is really sad, we've gotten into this situation in our culture here, that most of the time when an agency or an organization or a shelter asks you to foster, most of the time they consider that an adoption. And that's dishonest. It's dishonest to you. It's dishonest on their part. It's dishonest to the animal that is being handed over, and it's dishonest to the animals that are being affected at the new home. And then they complain that they don't have enough foster homes. So really what they're doing is called quick and unthought through adoptions is what they're doing. Oh, I'll foster. You know, I fell for it. I did it. I created my situation. Nobody pushed it on me. But I said, oh, I'll foster, Timber. So don't fool yourself and say you're just fostering, because it's offensive to the animals. Be very honest and say, all right, I thought I could foster, but I can't. And I want to know, animals that are in the household, can he stay? And sometimes the answer is yes, and we'll make it work. And sometimes the answer is no, we're miserable. And sometimes it's even extreme, we're miserable and we can't make it work, to the point where you've become miserable because they're marking, or they're fighting, or they're unhappy, or they're hiding, or they've changed, their personality has changed so much of your established animals that it's breaking your heart. So we have to really look at, when is fostering working, and are we fostering or are we adopting? So really think that through. And my final point about that, because I could probably just do a whole seminar on fostering and how to do fostering and all of that, is animals are animals, and an animal doesn't foster. An animal doesn't say, oh, there's a stray animal. It's very rare, unless it's a baby, like an infant, like a kitten, like TJ, for those of you that met TJ. It's rare that a mama will take in somebody, but sometimes he or she will. But rarely, if ever, in natural situations, would an animal in an established pack say, oh, there's a dog walking down the street. Let's foster him. Let's let him move in. He looks like he needs a home. Anybody care? Come on, move on in. Move over. Everybody, scoot down on the couch. We've got a dog walking down the street and he needs a home. But we're just fostering. We're just going to have him move in temporarily. No way would they do that. They're animals. They have territories. They have established roles. They have packs. And so it's very important to realize, when you say to an animal, I'm just fostering, that doesn't mean diddly to them. That's something humans do. That's not something animals do. So what we have to do is explain to them, I'm offering love, shelter, kindness, warmth. Tell them what you're offering to the animal and be honest about it. And I'm going to do, what are you going to do? I'm going to do flyers around the neighborhood. I'm going to take him to, the shelter has this Saturday where we bring all the fosters in and they meet people. So I'm going to take him to meet people. Tell them how you are planning to find a home for this foster. If you're planning on just moving them in and giving them love and kindness and shelter until maybe someday the shelter calls and says, we have somebody that happens to want that one that's been in your house for 9 months, then that's an adoption. From the animal's perspective, that's a family member that's moved in and is living there. So be very clear of what with yourself, first of all, of course, but with the animals, what you intend to do with this foster situation. Because a lot of times they'll be much more forgiving of you if you're honest about it. They may not like it, but they'll tolerate it. And they often, a lot of the times when people call me and they've had a foster situation and now they want to adopt, but they want to be respectful of the animals and help their animals understand, once we explain it, the animals are okay. They actually say, we get it. Okay, we'll do it. We'll welcome him. We'll take him. He can stay. And then people will send me an email or give me a phone call later and say, everybody shifted in the house after that talk, and everybody's getting along. So be honest with them and be honest with yourself. You're not just fostering if it's in the back of your mind that maybe they can stay. Or if it's worse, if it's in the back of your mind that nobody's going to want to adopt this special needs animal, or there's so many out there that need a home, it's going to take forever. You know, whatever those thoughts are in the back of your mind, your animals are aware of them. So be clear, be honest. All right, item number 7 on the top 10 human mistakes. We expect the established animals to like them. He's so sweet, he's so cute, he's so fun. Don't you love him? Don't you want to run out in the backyard and play with him? He can be your buddy. You guys can run and play. And meanwhile, your dog is looking at you saying, I didn't ask for a buddy, and no, I don't particularly like him, and that's my backyard he's running around in. So when we're expecting them to like them, they often will balk at it, just like us. You remember when you, I remember for myself when I was writing this, I was like, I remember my parents deciding sometimes who I should like. Like they'd have friends from the office. My dad would have, you know, man from the office, and they would invite the man, his wife, and child over because she or he was within my age range. And I remember sitting at dinner tables thinking, I have nothing in common with this kid. Why do they think I would like him? Not that I disliked him, not that I was mean to him or her, but I had nothing in common. We were from very different worlds. We had different personalities. We lived on different streets in different neighborhoods, and I just didn't get it why they thought I should all of a sudden just go out the door and play with this being as if I like him. We're doing the same things to our animals. So let them begin to like the new animal family members. Allow them their process. Just let them fall for them. Don't expect them. And so you can say, if you see him raising their lip, you know, if you got a dog and he's raising his lip and growling as because you're petting him and the other one's walking over, don't say to him, oh, that's not nice, honey. Say, all right, good job. You set your boundaries. And then look up at the new dog and say, walk away right now because he's right. I'm giving him love. That was him telling you. So if we can learn to respect the established roles and how the established family members are setting the ground rules, they will often accept them much better. But it's when we try and get everybody to get along quickly, or when we expect everybody to like each other, or we expect them to play or cuddle. So be careful what we're doing as humans. And often, once we step aside and stop what we're doing, there's lots of solutions that come rolling in quickly, which is great. Another one, and a much more serious one, is item number 8, and that is unsafe circumstances. This one is pretty clearly, for me, something I will always represent the animal. And an example I have is that comes to mind, and unfortunately I have too many of these examples from over the years, is a dog who attacked a cat and ripped his head open, broke its jaw, and they kept the cat, and they still think the dog and cat should be able to live together. And it's not a match. It's not a match. They fostered this kitty. They decide to give this kitty a home. And the dog is a Jack Russell, and the dog doesn't get it. I don't do cats, he said. I don't do cats as family members. So they wanted me to help the dog understand the cat is loved and staying. And they wanted me to help the cat understand he's loved and staying. And can you just maybe guess how the cat feels about living in this house where the dog almost killed him? The cat wants out. He doesn't care how much those people are wonderful. He doesn't care how much they love him. And he doesn't care how much they intend to make the dog learn to be nice to the kitty. He wants out. So if you have circumstances where it's unsafe, now that's a pretty extreme one, but sometimes it's unsafe because they're constantly fighting. Or even worse, which makes me very sad, is it's unsafe for them emotionally if they're hiding all the time. If somebody is hiding all the time, that is not a quality of life. That we are not doing them anything kind. If they lived in a cage and now they live under a bed, sure, maybe it's a step up. But that's not a quality life. We should be finding another home for that animal. So definitely we need to pay attention to how are they acting overall. Are they participating in their normal life, whether it's one of the established family members or not? And what are we doing, as the example I gave you about an elder kitty who might just say, can I have the bedroom to myself once in a while? So what are we doing to let them have downtime, as I call it? Kitties are very energetic, especially. They need to be able to let down their guard. They need to have that door closed and know that nobody's going to come in sniffing them under the bed. Nobody's going to come looking. Nobody's going to come bothering them. They can take a serious nap and relax. That can, if they are allowed that opportunity, that can make their entire day go better, their entire week go better, to have some downtime. So what are we doing to create safe circumstances and to give them downtime to relax and to honor who they are and how they've always lived? So if for example, we have like these kitties in the household I mentioned with the three levels, there was a cat tree from one household, and they just thought it was fine that all cats could climb on the cat tree. Well, guess what the two kitties who came into that household with that cat tree feel about that? They're not happy about that at all. That is their cat tree. That is their level of the home. One of them is living in fear with all the cat fights going on and all the marking. She's tiny, petite. She just wants all the chaos to go away. And her favorite spot used to be, when they didn't live together, the top of the cat tree. And she used to love to hang out there, her mom said, and she would groom and she would play. And now she lives under a bed. So we have to look at what are we doing with circumstances we've created or accidentally have occurred. And sometimes it happens right away, and sometimes 6 months later somebody will say, you know, the cat doesn't come out anymore. And it may be because there was a dog fight in the living room and we forgot about it and it wasn't threatening the cat at all, but the cat's not about to be around another dog fight again, so I'll just tuck back in the bedroom and only come out for dinner and potty breaks when the dogs are sleeping or outside. So we have to look at all circumstances going on in the household and going on in their lives. And we, of course, most importantly, have to keep the animals safe. And if it's an unsafe situation, we have to change it right away. We can't dilly-dally. Because I've had three clients in the last couple of years where cats have said, I don't feel safe, and the cats were killed. And the clients were intending to get around to it or were working on it. And I know their hearts were good, and I know they were working on it, but not okay. Definitely not okay. We can't merge households where we are creating unsafe circumstances. And if we've fallen in love with somebody and they have an aggressive dog and we have a timid dog that's scared, you know what? If we're making that choice to be with that human, we may have to make a choice to rehome one of the animals. We just may. It might break our hearts, but if we're making the choice to create a circumstance that perhaps is dangerous or perhaps is not going to work or perhaps is going to create misery, we may have to, on the other side of that happiness and joy, I'm so in love, isn't this great, we may have to say, but Fluffy is never going to feel safe with this German Shepherd, ever. He's intense, he's aggressive, and, you know, Fluffy has to find a home or the German Shepherd has to find a home. And sometimes on the other side of that is an even better life. Sometimes it might be, well, my brother-in-law's always wanted a German Shepherd, and he has plenty of time on his hands, and he works from home, and he has a huge space. Hey, that German Shepherd may have just gone off to a great life, might miss his human, and his human might miss him very much, but maybe you can go see him. It's at the brother-in-law's house or something like that. So again, if we can quit being stuck within ourselves and open up to possibilities, a lot of nice solutions can come forward. It may not be ideal, but sometimes situations can't always merge perfectly and work. All right, number nine, and this I've kind of touched on already, but I just want to really emphasize it, and that is they are not humans. They're cats, they're dogs, they're rabbits, they're guinea pigs, they're snakes, they're birds. They're not humans. So are you expecting them to understand the situation at hand, the merge, the new family member? Are you expecting them to understand it from your perspective? My guess is probably so. So if you're expecting them to understand it from your perspective, that's not fair. That's not kind. And one of the things that I find is when we have people who love animals, like we all do, or you wouldn't even be on this call, we often forget ourselves. We forget our boundaries. That's why I started with my personal example of Timber the dog. I forgot myself. I forgot my boundaries. I forgot my animal's needs. I fell for them, period, end of story. I fumbled through it. I found a solution. So it's all possible. But when you are catching yourself with that, most importantly, reel things in. Like, for example, if you have fostered somebody and they ended up staying, and then 6 months later you foster somebody and they end up staying, then you owe it to yourself and your animals to say, no more fostering. I get it. I'm so grateful that you guys have accepted the two that I brought in that I didn't intend to keep, that I will go to that shelter and tell them, take me off your foster list. I'm done. I have a perfect family right now. I'm stopping. Here's my point. Here's my end point. I'm so lucky it's working. I worked so hard to get the harmony back in the household, and it's here. Take me off. Don't even call me. I can't handle a phone call because I'll be tempted. So do whatever you need to set your boundaries and set your limits. And that doesn't mean don't help somebody, but don't help somebody to the point of risking others. I have a client in California that is a perfect example, and bless her heart, she has saved many, many lives of animals. She lives in a rural area where animals are very mistreated and neglected. She now has turned her entire outside area into a giant cattery, half of which are feral cats. She has close to 30 feral cats. And some are in cages and some are not, and I have my own personal judgment about, you know, feral cats living in cages, what kind of life is that? She feels it's right, and this is what she does, and she also has about 17 dogs, and she's turned her entire life into chaos and calls every so often to figure out, all right, what do I need to do? Who, you know, so-and-so's not eating well, so-and-so's been in a fight. And, you know, I have to accept that's what she's doing, and she's helping them, and she's learned to listen to me over the years. And there are certain ones where she'll say, I just knew it. I knew this one needed to leave here because it's too upsetting to the others, isn't it? So she's starting to learn a little bit of balance, but she called me yesterday for her appointment, and she has taken in two pit bulls who were severely abused, who she's been helping, who were tied to a tree, and she's been helping them for 6 months, and the family finally got evicted from their home. And she happened to be there checking on the dogs because she just made friends with the dogs and never even talked to the people. And they said, you can have them if you want them. And she walked away with two pit bulls. And they have been tied up their entire life. They fight with each other because they're so distraught and they're so freaked out and they're so scared and they were beaten and all kinds of stuff. And she brings them into her household full of cats and dogs. Can you imagine how everybody is feeling? They don't feel safe. She's got them in a room. They're isolated. And that's another thing I often hear. But I've got them in another room. But you know what? The animals feel energies. They don't say, oh, good, there's a closed door. That pit bull will never get to me. They say, that door opens and closes every time my human goes in to feed them. And if that dog gets out, I'm dead. That's what they're busy thinking and feeling. So she has two pit bulls that's breaking her heart because she saw how badly they were treated. And she's out of whack again, but good for her. She called at the right time and said, help me out. What do I need to know about them? She's wondering if one of them is even adoptable at all. And so we were able to look at who they were. And more importantly, I was able to help the household understand this is temporary. She's committed to it. She's listening to you guys. You aren't safe, so stay away, and she'll keep you as safe as possible, telling the kitties stay out of the living room because this door is off of the living room where the dogs are. This is all temporary. So when we have a situation and we are putting it into a predicament, if we also have in our minds, this is a temporary thing, and I mean it, and we're going to shift this, and we're going to get them out, and she's, you know, we came up with some ideas, and she's got some options, and she's going to work on it, and she even said at the end, if none of this works within 2 weeks, I will walk them into the shelter as much as it'll break my heart, because they'll probably be euthanized, but I won't risk the safety of my animals or the unhappiness of my dogs, because now a couple of her other dogs are fighting that never fight, not because they've even met the pit bulls, because they didn't even sniff them, but they know they're in their house, and they know the energy is there. And I'm not using this as an example of pit bulls are bad, but unfortunately these two were tied to a tree, and they're pretty mentally unstable. And that, I think that they can be rehabbed with lots of TLC and a professional, but the animals feel it even if they're in another room. So remember, they aren't humans. They are animals. They are feeling. They are sensing. They are smelling. They are responding to body language. So don't expect them to respond to the situation as if they are people. Okay, and number 10 is, but I did it for you. I went and got this other doggy because you're alone all day. And I thought it would be really wonderful so you guys could play. And then your 7-year-old dog says, but I don't play with other dogs. I've never really liked other dogs that much. I just like you, and I'm fine at home sleeping, waiting until you get home. And they say, I've never really been a playful dog with other dogs. Dogs aren't my thing. And then I say to the human, he says, dogs aren't his thing. Well, that's true, but I thought maybe he'd start playing more. So I did it for you is a real guilty place for us humans. And it really causes the animals to rebel. It's like, you didn't do this for me. I didn't ask for it. I didn't show I wanted it. I didn't indicate I wanted it. You decided it. Now, most of the time, we're right. We do feel bad that they're home alone all day if we're at work. But are they of a personality, or are they of an age, or are the household circumstances such that they're ready for change? Because just because they might be lonely during the day doesn't mean the answer is another animal. The answer could be take them to doggy daycare. The answer could be find a friend who works from home and say, can he come over a couple days a week and just lay next to you at the computer? Find another situation that could help bring more happiness and joy because they're appearing lonely, which they might be. But the answer is not necessarily a buddy known as another animal. Sometimes it's great. But before you do it for them, ask them what they want through an animal communicator or through your own heart. And be realistic. Is it going to work? So kitties, as we all know, are much more territorial than other animals. And if you have an established kitty that's had this tiny little apartment all to himself or herself, and everything's fine, and they're young and playful, just because we bring another cat in doesn't mean they're going to go, yippee-skippy, let's play. They might in 6 months, they might in 2 days, but they're going to need to have their process, and they're going to need to understand, why did you do this, and when did this happen, and in your head, and how come this kitty showed up? And so be honest with them and find out from them first, do they want the change that you're considering, if it's a controllable change, as opposed to a stray who just shows up, or as opposed to a merging of family members, etc. So I did it for you. Let that go. My biggest request is let that go. That's not a good thing. We're not doing it for them. We're doing it for their joy, but what we should be thinking is, what do I need to do to help you be happier? Not, you seem unhappy, I'll get you a pal. Because a pal is not always the answer. Some animals love living alone. Some animals love being king of the castle, queen of the castle, queen bee, princess. And a lot of times people will say, I know, she's such a princess. She just loves people, and she loves me, and she's never really liked other dogs. And I say, and so why did you go get a two-year-old dog from the shelter that wants to play constantly? Because I thought she'd want the company. But we're forgetting who she is or who he is. So ask them first. Don't do things for them, but do things with them. Okay. So that's top 10, and of course I could have done more than 10. But those are the key ones that come up over and over again when I'm working with people and I'm hoping to help with harmony and solutions. And that can feel devastating, and that can feel sad and bad, but that's just where, that's the groundwork. That's where the problem begins, and solutions do come forward. So I want you to remember that harmony is definitely what everybody wants. The animals want it, you want it, everybody wants it. So begin at the beginning. And I don't care if you merged households 3 years ago and there's been conflicts once in a while, or, you know, you fostered somebody last week, but they're gone now, but the household is still, you know, acting funny. I don't care what your circumstances are. I want you to start by going back to the beginning. What was the household like before the changes? Even if you need to, like, sit down with a piece of paper and a pencil and close your eyes and think about it. Well, Fluffy used to love to sleep on the top of the kitty tree, and now she never does. So stop and think about, what was the household like before the changes that occurred? Even if you don't have bad conflict going on, but it doesn't feel great, or it's just stressing everybody out because we have so many animals, whatever. Go back to what was working and what was joyful, and take note of that, and try and achieve some of those circumstances again. So if Fluffy loves the cat tree and the other kitties are on the cat tree all the time, get another cat tree and put it in the bedroom and let Fluffy have that one and close the bedroom door and let her have it during the day with her own litter box in there a couple days a week so she can have what she used to have. There's ways to quickly and easily actually recreate some scenarios that will make them feel more normal, because that's what they used to have and what they used to do. So go back in time to what was working and what was joyful. And if you had multiple animals before, two or more, what did the furry ones do to interact? How did they interact before new family members came? Did they play? And are they still playing? Did they not play? And suddenly you think they should be playing because there's a playful one that's moved in. So remember, how were they with one another? How did they interact? If you were to tell me that the two dogs used to cuddle every single night, and ever since the new dog's been around, the one dog sleeps on the couch out in the living room and won't even come into the bedroom to his dog bed. Well, that makes you sad, doesn't it? Because his norm has been changed, and it doesn't work for him that there's a third dog. And so I'll say, well, when did the third dog come? Well, 3 weeks ago. When did you start letting the third dog into his bedroom at night? Right away. Oh, really? You mean you didn't have to, he didn't have to earn his way into the bedroom? He should have. Make him sleep outside in the living room. Oh, but he's so cute, and we love him so much, and we love our dogs in the bedroom. Tough. It's just a transition period. That's all. Show your established doggies that his bedroom and his ritual at night, cuddling with his doggy buddy, is being honored by closing the door and telling the other one, we love you, go sleep in the living room, or you sleep in the family room, or whatever. And let the other ones feel, I'm so special, I'm so loved, this is what they're doing for me. And eventually, let it happen on a weekend, okay, you can come in tonight. And before you know it, the established ones will continue their normal rituals if it's not put upon them too fast, and if they're allowed to be honored and respected for what does work. So go back to remembering what does work, and what was working, and what was joyful, and how did they interact, and what roles of the roost were previously established by the humans and by the animals, and how are they being honored with the new situations. So if you can write those questions down and ponder them and write down some answers, and if you live with other people, work together as a team of, oh, you know what? The dog loved when we played ball at night right before, you know, for their potty break, and we would play ball for 10 minutes. I haven't done that since the new dogs moved here because I just figured they'd go outside and play. Well, guess what? He misses his little ritual of playing ball with mom or dad right before bedtime. So go back to things that worked, and it's amazing when we do how they calm down and how they think, well, this isn't so bad. Maybe you can stay because my world hasn't changed quite so much. Okay. And always explain why the changes. Be very honest. I fell for the dog. The dog was in the street. The kitty was in the snow. This one's been in a cage for 5 years, and I just feel so bad, and it's an elder, and he's sick, and I want to give him a home so he can die in a home. Just be very honest. Tell them why. And if you've blown it and you've done stuff wrong, apologize. Just like you would need to a human, you apologize. I had to apologize to Shiloh, my girl dog, after Timber was gone and say, I'm so sorry. It took me 2 weeks to get it, that I was not supposed to have him in our household. And I apologized. And I said, thank you for being patient and not fighting with him. And thank you for understanding that I was just being human and I blew it. And okay, I'm back on track now. So be honest with them and apologize. And that doesn't mean, I'm so sorry I did this to you, and I know you guys don't like each other. Don't be pathetic. Just apologize. Just own your stuff and apologize. That's all animals really want. So own your responsibility. And then decide also, where can you change you? Is there anything you can do to change you about the circumstance? So I foster too much, and I cave in, and I keep them. So I need to change that. Or I told them I wouldn't foster for a year, and it's been 2 months of them fostering again. I've disrespected them. Change that. Or if you are, you know, falling in love with somebody and you want them to move in right away, you could say, you know what? I'm going to give you dogs some time to get to know each other. We don't have to live together right away. We'll take 6 more months, and we'll do this slowly. In the past, I would have had to move in right away, and we would have expected everybody to get along. But I think I'll change my pattern this time and take it a little slower, and we'll go play in parks, and we'll go on weekend trips, and we'll get you guys to become buddies first, and then we'll move you in together. So think about ways that you can change how you've done things in the past and how you can change yourself. And again, be honest with the animals how you're doing that. And with that said, I just want you to know that probably 90% of the time, solutions happen in merged households and with predicaments. And sometimes they do not. And an example I have of a kitty that I had that I brought, came into my life with a relationship, so I didn't have her from kitten. And I met her probably when she was about, she was younger. She was probably about 8. And she had a boy kitty companion, and he died young of kidney failure. And so we decided we wanted a second kitty, and we asked her if she would work on it. And she said, I don't want anybody. And we said, like humans do, but you had, you know, the other kitty, and you loved him, and blah, blah, blah. Well, that was that relationship, and I'm done with that relationship. So the compromise was we decided we wanted another kitty, and she didn't have to like him. And she didn't have to cuddle him or groom him. We made it very clear to her. And when he came in the house, she walked right up to him, sniffed him. It was a kitten. He was all excited. She looked at him, looked at us, and said, remember, I'll never like him. And she walked away. And she never liked him. And she lived until 23. But they never fought. And they cohabitated just fine. But she never played with him. And she never liked him. And that was her compromise. And she didn't mark. She didn't live in fear. She hissed at him if he was making her angry, but other than that, there was harmony in the household, so our hearts would have loved for her to like him and love him and groom him and make it that cute scenario us humans love, but that was our stuff, not hers, and it worked fine. So he got lots of extra love from us because there were times he wanted to play and he couldn't believe there was a cat in the house and she wouldn't play with him, so we just played with him more. So be honest with circumstances and let the animals say what they need, and you will find that solutions can happen no matter what. And they may not like somebody, but that doesn't mean they're unhappy, and that doesn't mean they have to fight. It just might mean, not my cup of tea. He ain't my thing. I'm probably going to not hang out with him much, but have at it. You can love him all you want. I'll be over here, though, and come see me when he's not in the room. So they'll let you know how it's going to work, and if we listen better, if we're honest up front, we work through the changes as slowly and as evenly as possible, then we can create harmony and positive outcomes by listening and loving. All right, so I hope that's been helpful, and I'm going to go into the question that was submitted to me now, and I only got one submitted ahead of time, and this is a question that says, one of my foster cats lives in our home office. While in the office, the other cats rarely see her. They will occasionally come into the office since the humans are there, but otherwise she's alone, which she prefers. When she ventures out of the office to the other rooms in the house, she often pees. She will not pee outside her box in the office, which I assume is because it's her home, so it appears that she is marking. So my question is, what would you do with a cat that seems to be marking? We just leave her in the office where she has her own bed, food, water, and box, but this isn't ideal for us humans or any of the cats. What if someone doesn't have a separate room? What to do? So I'm a little, and I don't think, unless Kim came on late. Kim, are you on the line? And if so, unmute yourself if you did. Because she was going to be on the line, and this is her question. Okay. So I can't quite tell. There's a little bit of information here that I don't have. By the fact that she says that she ventures out and the others venture in, that tells me it's not a closed-door policy. It tells me that she is just choosing to have the office for her safe zone. And when she steps out of her safe zone, she's entering their safe zone. So she feels vulnerable. And the only way to not feel vulnerable if you're a kitty is to merge your scent with the other scent to say, is it okay if I stay? Or if you're a dominant kitty, it's saying, I'm here to take over. She sounds to me like she's not there to take over, but she ventures out in fear and says, here's a little bit of my scent. I hope I can be accepted. So first and foremost, what I would do with this situation is be thrilled that there's peace and harmony and that she has a sanctuary. And I would probably not welcome the other kitties into her sanctuary very much, because if this is a typical Kim situation, she's coming from a shelter situation where she was probably overwhelmed with a lot of other kitties. And so what she needs is peace. She needs time to adapt. She needs time to adjust. She needs calm energy. And I would just let her have that sanctuary. I wouldn't be freaked out like, oh my gosh, you know, Bobby got into her space, you know, but do your best to honor it and keep the door closed most of the time. And don't expect them to merge back and forth until she feels safe coming out. And she may need to come out and have you supervise and tell the kitties, this is who this is, and she's been feeling nervous and scared because she's been in a shelter. And again, go back to being honest. Tell the situation. Share the circumstances. Provide the details. She's been scared. She's been in a cage for a certain number of years. She's been sick. She doesn't feel good. I need you guys to be gentle with her. I'm just going to let her walk around the living room a little bit, or I'm going to put her on my lap, have her on your lap, and have her feel safety and calmness in the room that she keeps marking, and say, see, you can be safe out here. Nobody's attacking you. They seem to be okay with knowing that you're here and why you're here. But show her safety in the new spaces by spending some time and being focused. Don't expect her to just walk out and go, oh, cool, none of the cats are attacking me, so all must be good, because she's a cat, and that doesn't work for a cat's head. And she's probably come from a shelter situation where there's all kinds of marking and freaking out and high energy and fear going on. So that's all part of her energy field still. Just because she's come into a blissful, sweet, calm, loving home doesn't mean she has done shedding all that energy from her own energy field. So do it slowly and help her help the other kitties understand. Have her be there as you explain to them who she is, why she's there, what her journey's been. Then she'll know that you're helping them understand her. And then offer her safety and calmness and feelings of non-vulnerable situations by being with her in that space and just reading a book or being calm, having calm music, letting her be on a lap or nearby, and then take her back to her sanctuary. End the peaceful little experience, 10 minutes, 2 hours, whatever, by taking her back to her sanctuary. And next time she comes out, she realizes it was peaceful last time. I could probably come out and find peacefulness again, especially it sounds like from this question that the kitties are not attacking or fighting with her. So that would be a perfect example of how to take a situation. So whatever situations are in your head, and I do have some time for another question or two, remember, we are starting by explaining the situation. This is why we are where we are, everybody. This is why this happened. And this is what I need. I need you all to try and be gentle or kind or respectful. Not, can't you get along? Isn't she cute? Don't you want to love her? Tell them what you need. I need peacefulness around here. If you don't like her, you walk away. But I don't want you fighting with her because I need peacefulness in my home. And then allowing time through patience and love and controlled circumstances, put them back into their safe space, bring them back out, you know, put them back in. You control the situation. Don't leave it up to the animals to decide what's right and what's wrong, because they're going to be animals and defend their turf, or they're going to be animals and they're going to get upset and say, why are you here, and take it out on each other. So you have to control it, just like you would control three toddlers running around playing together. Okay, so if somebody would like to unmute and ask a question, I would be happy to answer. Okay, and if nobody has a question, then everybody can go ahead and unmute. If you have mute buttons, if you have star six. We do still have people on the line, correct?
Yes.
The hard part about doing these talks is talking into Never Never Land and having it be so quiet. Okay, no questions from anybody, and so therefore I would just like to ask any comments that you would make, anything you want to release about how you might have done something wrong, not with going into all the details, but just you got it, you get it, what you could do differently, any comments anybody wants to make.
Oh, I actually have two. I have one early early in this. I said that I had at one point lived with two cats who could never be in the same room. And I'm sure that was, I mean, that the newcomer was a stray found on my stoop in Brooklyn in the middle of a blizzard, yada, yada, yada. and he was never accepted. And probably if I had been better at explaining things, that might have gone better.
Mm-hmm.
And the second time was a friend's cat who just stayed with me for a while. And man, the minute she walked in the door, she thought, you are cool, I like you a lot, what are these other cats doing here, can you make them go away?
Mm-hmm.
and she had her own room, and I really tried to introduce them, but I think she was the one who said,
of course,
I'm not living with these other cats.
Yeah, and that's a perfect understanding of who she is, what
mm-hmm.
her personality was and who she was. She probably loved her little room, don't bug me, I don't want any cats. So even though our head might say, but that's so sad, I want her walking around the whole house. But
well,
it's
actually,
not sad if it works.
She wanted to walk around the whole house.
Uh-huh.
She just wanted the other cats to be out of her way.
And that's where you have to say, sorry, those are my kitties and I love them very much.
Right.
And that's not
right.
How it works here.
She's been back with her person for more than a year.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if somebody is an only child in a household and they are expected to share later, how do they feel?
Yeah.
Usually that's really hard to adjust to. Some of them might say, wow, this is great. I've got a new friend, and this is fun, and I never knew how a friend could be. But a lot of them say, no, thank you. I like my human all to myself, and I like to go in whatever window I want, whenever I want, and I want to bark when I want, and not have to figure out what you're barking about. So if they're used to a whole lifestyle of being solo, and we've suddenly added somebody, we have to understand that they're going to need to transition into deciding what works for them to not be solo anymore. And like my elder kitty, she just kept doing her own thing as if he didn't exist. You know, she just, like, I'm going to the potty, I'm going to go to the, you know, get my food right now. I'm going to go get up on someone's lap. I'm going to do it when I want to, how I want to. And I admired her for that because she kept her world the same, and we honored that, and we totally let go of, we never said to her, isn't he cute? Don't you want to play with him? Don't you want to love him? And so she was able to maintain the integrity of her world in a world that had changed, because she was an indoor-only kitty, and so is he, with a new member coming, but she just didn't, she didn't let it get to her because we all respected that, except for him. He kept trying for a while, but then he finally gave up. Anybody else?
Well, this is MJ, and I have a quick one of trying to introduce three different attempts to get a companion for my standard poodle. And you know what? It always, he looks up at me like, well, so is this for you or is this for me?
And what's the answer?
Clearly, I get that it's for me, and it's like, all right, well then, I didn't need another dog. I thought you needed another dog. And the dog goes home.
Uh-huh.
And he remains an only dog, but I just kept thinking that his life would be more enriched.
Right.
And, you know, he's like, no, you know.
And if he wanted another dog, his life would have been more enriched, but he doesn't want one. And, you know, because when you see two dogs, like when I had a dog years and years ago, I said to myself, and he didn't like other dogs, I said, someday in the future, I'm going to get two dogs next time so they can play, because I wanted that option mm-hmm. for the dogs. They, when I'm at work, they'll be in the backyard, they can play with each other, they can keep each other company. So I just made sure that I adopted them close to each other, and I let the first dog pick out the second dog and all of that, but, you know, adopted them very close in time to one another. But my first dog, he didn't like other dogs. He liked food and me. That was it. So we have to remember, when we look around at our family members and our friends and our neighbors and ourselves, we all have our own personalities. We all have our own ways of being, our own things we love to do. I have a friend that loves to hang glide. Well, I don't hang glide. I can't imagine it. And I think it's great that he loves it. Might I try it someday? Maybe, maybe not. But that's something he does, you know? And there might be somebody that loves to crochet, and I think, oh, gosh, I could never sit and crochet. But do I need to be someone who crochets? No. So if we could just allow with our animals the opportunity for them to let everybody just be who they are and see if relationships can unfold, especially when it's a merged household and we kind of really need to make it work if at all possible. If we allow it to unfold, it actually can be kind of a fun show, as long as we're honoring some of the old things that they used to love, not expecting them all to fall for each other and have it all go peachy keen, perhaps not even expecting somebody to get along. If somebody in the family says, well, he's never really played much with other dogs, then don't say, come over here and play with, you know, Bosco, because he's two and got the need to play. So be real with who they are and how it's going. And I wish much happiness, harmony, and household bliss to all of you. So thank you very much for listening to all of this. And hopefully you can apply things that you learned from this talk and see shifts and changes right away, because it often does shift and change with just one consult with people with much of what I've shared with you today. So thank you, everybody, and go off and have a wonderful fall Saturday.
Thank you.
Thanks.